to say it. Somebody should. Let's talk about tool time. Let's talk about bull wine, yeah. You're asking the questions that nobody could. Like where the bull thaws in, all the inharmonies. Do, do, helpful snowman. Do.
Hey, listeners. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I guess this is a birthday podcast. Happy birthday to me, huh? This is nothing I wanted to do more than, Jesus, this microphone. Okay. Like I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted by my own clumsiness, nothing I wanted to do more than this on my birthday. But I kind of have my birthday going on tomorrow and went to a concert yesterday. So, you know, I'm good. Some things to cover. So I'm sure you all heard about the passing of Stan Lee. It was sad. You know, I don't know. I started writing something about it and then was like, I don't know. I don't want to. I didn't want to be part of the... I didn't want to make myself part of the, like, conspicuous grief crowd, I guess, because, you know, I didn't know him and whatever. And I was getting a little grossed out, I think, because it was like, this makes me sound like an asshole, but it was like everything I saw online was like, you know, oh my God, Robert Downey Jr. shares how much Stan Lee, how great he was, and Chris Hemsworth. And I was like, how about some of these fuckers who like worked in comics? I mean, I know that's not for everyone, but come on, man. Like, it's just all we care about is the movie stuff, and it's like, yeah, that wouldn't exist without Stan. But at the same time, I was like, I don't know, like, I'd like to hear more about him from people who worked with him and like people who inspired him to us, or he inspired to a similar path or something. It's this whole thing that I've got like kicking around in my head too about so for part of my work, I interviewed the sci-fi author Connie Willis, because she lives around here, right? And she's like, you know, she's not super famous. I mean, in the sci-fi world, if you're like a big sci-fi reader, you probably know who she is. But if you're not, you probably don't. But she's great. I mean, her books are good, and she's a good person too. Like, and she has great stories and all this stuff. I guess what I'm doing right now is kind of advertising for a different show. So watch that. I don't know. But she was talking about, you know, like when she talks to people, it's always like, what do you do? And she's like, oh, I'm a writer. And they're like, anything I've heard of? And she'll say like, well, Doomsday Book or a couple others. And they're like, no. And she's like, they always say like, have you had anything made into a movie? You know, because that's how people know about books now, is because they get made into movies, right? And I don't know, I'm just like, sometimes you just want to read a book that works as a book and that you're like, this wouldn't make a very good movie, but it was a good book and that's what it was meant to be. Something, I don't know, there's just something there. But anyway, so we lost Stan. I tried, I think, two or three times. I think when I went to Wizard World Comic Con, I think that's what it was, in Chicago, in 2002, I was hoping to see Stan. And then I went to Denver Comic Con. It's probably been 2-3 years ago. And he was supposed to be there, but then canceled. But, you know, it's fine. It's like, I didn't get to meet him or take a picture with him, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, you know, maybe that's all right. I don't know. We also lost Steve Ditko this year. So that's like the original, you know, Spider-Man team. And as you know, we do a Amazing Spider webcast from here too. So that's just a little thing. I wanted to talk about it though. I had this weird moment because, so I was in Portland this week and I was on the train and I had bought Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man issue 310, because that was the end of Chip Zdarsky's run on Spider-Man, or on, you know, the Spider-Man book. And I had subscribed to it last year. I subscribed to two comics last year. It was this one and something else. Must have been Amazing Spider-Man. And I, you know, I subscribed to this specifically because Chip Zdarsky, because I like Chip Zdarsky. This is a helpful snowman recommendation for comics. Whatever Chip Zdarsky's up to, I'd go with that. I mean, he did Howard the Duck, which was great. He did like some Jughead comics, which were good. You know, and it's like he took a pretty almost non-premise thing and made it something pretty good. The Archie comics, the remakes by Mark Waid are really good too. But he did Sex Criminals, which wasn't my thing, but I'm not a big Matt Fraction guy. And it's like a team co-written book or something. But so this is a cool issue, and I'd seen a lot about it online just because people really liked it. And also, it's a rarer thing to see a comic that's written and illustrated by the same person. And it's super rare to see that when it comes to like a big mainstream character, like a Spider-Man. I mean, you very rarely come across like a Batman comic or an X-Men comic or something that's written and illustrated by the same person. But Chip Zdarsky wrote and illustrated this issue, which is pretty cool. And like, it's got the, you know, creator name at the top, and usually it's a couple names, and it just says Chip Zdarsky. And so I bought it at a comic store because we just happened to buy a comic store, and I was like, I'm going to buy this if they've got it, and they did. And I, you know, collectors are going to cringe, but I folded it in half and put it in my coat pocket, my inner coat pocket. And so I had it in there, and I was riding around with it for a couple days before we were on the train, and I was like, this is a good time to read a little Spider-Man. And it's really good. Issue 310, Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man. If you can find it at your local comic shop, give it a whirl. It's worth your time. It was a really good story of written by someone who understands this character and what the character means to people in a very deep way. And so I read this book, and then it's like, you know, I put it back in my coat pocket, and I'm like, I'm not crying, you're crying. And then we get off the train, and it's, you know, I just finished this 5 minutes ago, and then someone's like, my friends were there, and I heard them talking, and one of them was like, don't tell him, it'll just make him sad. And I was like, don't tell me what? And they were like, Stan Lee is dead. And I was like, oh, man. And I was very bummed out by it. I don't know. It's just like one of those things, you know, you have those moments where you're sort of like, it just didn't seem fair. You know, this person who'd done all this stuff still has to die too. You're like, yeah, I guess everyone has to die, which sounds really dumb when you say it out loud. But when you're in that moment of thinking, you know, oh, this guy did so much for me personally. I mean, I know he did a lot for the world and everything, but you know, it's just, a personal hero of mine, for sure. And then you're like, I guess he still dies like everyone, you know? And it just seems very unfair. And I didn't like it. I knew intellectually that something like this would happen. I mean, obviously. I didn't think Stan Lee was going to be immortal. But like, knowing it intellectually and then it happens and it just feels different. But so anyway, I just want to put out there a little thank you to Stan Lee for all the good stuff. And we've been reading the first issue. I think we're up to like issue 12 or 13 on Amazing Spider webcast. So a lot of the stuff is written by Stan Lee, and it's great. It's like a lot of fun. You know, he's a fun writer. He's very voicey, and he brought some things to comics that they didn't really have before. They didn't showcase in the way that they did post Stan Lee. So they wouldn't be what they are today without him. And so I just wanted to say thanks for that. And yeah, real good ending there, huh? And yeah, so that's it. But anyway, now that we're done with that, we can get off that and get on to some more fun stuff. So I went to Portland. I think I made my fucking 15th to 20th trip out there this year. If you're new to the show, I was in a writing workshop out there that met every week for 3 months and managed to go out there. Also, my girlfriend lives out there. So Portland is my home away from home for now. But what's funny about it is, like, you go out there and it's like, usually when I go out there, I might do one thing that I haven't really done before out there. Cause there's so much that I have done. And also when I go out there, you go visit your girlfriend. When you're in this like long distance relationship thing, you don't necessarily want to like do stuff all the time. Like, cause what you miss in your relationship is like something that sucks about it that I didn't think about, or something that I think to keep in mind if you're ever in this situation is like, you know, your girlfriend lives somewhere cool like Portland, but when you go out to visit, don't feel like you have to, it's not like you're on vacation every time you go out there, you know, go out and just visit. And it's like, okay to sleep in and like watch the entire new season of the Great British Baking Show or whatever. And not eat at like a cool Thai place that you stand in line outside for 45 minutes and shit. Like it's okay to do that. And in fact, I think it's good to do it that way. But, so there are some highlights, of course. We had, you know, I was like, don't talk about a Thai place, whatever, but we ate at Pak Pak, which I guess is like a famous-ish place out there. So it was me and three friends and my girlfriend. We're all out there. My girlfriend couldn't come, though. She was at work at this point. But it was really weird. Like, this restaurant, I have this struggle with fancy restaurants, and this place is not fancy in as much as it's not like a, it doesn't seem real snooty, but at the same time, it does. Because we were eating in what's basically a screened-in patio, freezing our asses off at like a picnic table type setup. But then, like, there are things that happen at these kinds of restaurants that you're like, I don't understand what's going on. They brought out this pitcher of water and we're all drinking water and I'm thirsty as hell. And I take like a big drink and I was like, what? This water tastes really fucked up. And then, you know, someone at our table was finally like, did you guys water taste like fucked up? And I was like, yeah. And it kind of tasted like it had been, like rice had been cooked in the water and then the water had been filtered. Like it just had a very faint, grainy taste to it. But it looked normal and whatever. And so we were like, I want, you know, we're conspiring. Like, how can we find out? Because this is what happens at the fancy restaurant, right? You don't want to be the idiot who's like, this water tastes funny. And they're like, yeah, it's supposed to taste like that. But so then what happens is you are so afraid to ask that you would end up drinking an entire pitcher of water they use to clean a window or something, just because you're like, well, I guess this is what fancy people do. I guess this is the fancy life, is drinking this kind of water. So we were scheming to, you know, I was like, maybe we should try and take a pitcher off one of these other tables when these people get up, and then we'll see if it's the same. Because if it tastes the same, then it's probably supposed to be like that. And eventually someone got on their phone, looked up like the restaurant had like an FAQ, and on the FAQ it's like, why does the water taste weird? And it explained it's got some leaf in it and something else. So I was like, okay, it's supposed to taste like this. So then I drank more with abandon. But it was like the perfect moment of, you know, I'm not fancy enough to know for sure that it's supposed to be like that. And also I'm not fancy enough to where I'm like, I, you know, this fancy restaurant I'm sitting in, I feel like empowered enough in this environment to, if I have a problem, I'm going to say something about it. Or, you know, to just be like, this water tastes funny. Is this supposed to be like this? Also, I guess maybe it seems insulting somehow, right? Because you're like, this water tastes funny. And they're like, it's supposed to be like that. And you're like, oh, okay. I ate a chunk of pork fat that I thought was a pineapple. And when I thought it was a pineapple, I was not going to eat it. And then when I found out it was fat, I was like, okay. That's not a statement of how much I enjoy pork fat. It's a statement of how much I hate pineapple. My God, do I hate pineapple. couple other highlights. On one of the plane rides, there was a couple getting on. They were a super Portlandy couple. Like, the guy was in head-to-toe black denim and, you know, had his, like, jeans cuffed and had the Doc Martens and stuff. And then he's getting on, and he's got this big backpack, and he's putting it in the overhead bin. And his girlfriend's behind him. She's got a beret, and which I was like, it's been a long time since I've seen the young lady trying to pull off the beret. I feel like I've seen the old man wearing the beret, which I think is just a thing of, like, I think when you're an old man, I don't know what age it is. Someone needs to tell me at what point in life, like, I need someone to put it on their calendar to tell me or remind me every year and just be like, can Pete get away with wearing, like, old man hats yet? Is he there yet or not quite yet? Because I'm looking forward to it. You know, like, how old do I have to be or what situation where I could wear, like, a bowler hat? Is that ever going to happen to me? Or, like, you know, a cab driver type hat. Like, if I just wore that around, if I did it now, people would just think I was an asshole. And if I did it, I feel like I'm a ways away. But at some point, it would be nice to have some authority be like, at this age, you can officially, it's almost like I wish you couldn't really buy those, like they're like lottery tickets or something, except instead of 18, it's like age 40. You get to age 40 and they're like, well, okay, you're officially entering, you know, your second half of life or whatever. And I know that's not something that most of us love, but at the same time, hey, you can wear fucking fucked up hats now. So anyway, she's wearing this beret. They're getting on the plane. He's putting his backpack in. He's putting it in sideways in the bin, which if you're like anyone who's flown ever, they over and over are like, put it in the bin. What am I trying to say? Perpendicular to the bin. Like, put it in not sideways, I guess. Because the bins are deeper than they look, and that allows more people to put their shit in the bins, right? And so he's trying to put it in sideways, and she's like, babe, you got to put it in, you got to turn it this way. And he, like, ignored her and kept doing it, and then she's like, no, babe, you got to turn it and do it this way. And she tells him, like, three times, and he's, like, struggling to get it in there, and then finally he goes, why? And I was just, it sounded like a four-year-old. And these are, like, people in their probably late 20s, early 30s. And I was just like, sometimes the way that people in relationships talk to each other, where it's just like, she obviously knows what she's doing. And you're just like, what are you just being defiant to the end? And it's like, also, what you're doing clearly isn't working. So just do that. She's trying to make you be polite, damn it. Let her. We had a very weird bus driver who, and when I say weird, when I say like a weird Portland bus driver, you're probably imagining like maybe a barefoot hippie or like maybe some guy's driving the bus where I'm like, I'm not sure if this guy is the bus driver or if he's like a berserk person from the streets who just decided to take over the bus driving duty today and is making the stops for some reason. There was a story about that, though. Where the fuck did I see that? I feel like it was on one of these podcasts, or it was maybe a documentary about this guy who, when he was, I think he was a teenager or something, and he wanted to drive the trains, like drive the subway in New York and stuff. And so at some point, he just got like a uniform and just got on the train and started fucking driving it. And he did it correctly. Like, he's made the stops and stuff, and it worked. But, you know, and then he got in deep shit after that. But it was kind of hilarious. It was like, and then maybe it wasn't so hilarious. Like, maybe he got convicted of a crime later or something. I don't know, some weird shit. But the beginning of it was pretty interesting because it was like, this dude wanted to drive a train real bad, and he did. But that's not what we had. We had this lady, as she's pulling up to the curb, I could tell she was completely made up. Like, her makeup was hardcore. Dolly Parton-esque. If 9 to 5 was about a bus driver, this is what it would have been. So we get on, and like, as the bus is pulling up, I'm like, check out this bus driver. And she opens the door and we're getting on, and she's like, hey, you guys made it. That's great, you know? And she's like, thank you so much for having your passes ready. She's like, most people get on and it's like they have to dig out their pass and they've been standing at the thing. And so we're sitting down and she has kind of a running monologue the entire time we're on the bus. Like every time someone got on or every time we moved away from a stop, she'd go, okay, I'm going to press the gas button. Everybody hold on. And like, we made this one turn that was pretty sharp and she's saying, okay, here comes a sharp turn. Everybody hang on. And the first one was legitimately a sharp turn, but then she was kind of doing it every turn. But then she was also just talking, you know, she was saying, oh, Dutch Brothers. I love Dutch Brothers, as we were passing one. And then at some point there was like this guy sitting in front of us, who smelled like pee really bad. And he said something like, I'm sorry, I wasn't listening to what you said before. And she was like, oh no, that's fine. It doesn't, you know, this does not require you to listen. She's like, I've been doing this for 12 years or something. And it only took me 2 or 3 years to just start thinking everything out loud. And, you know, she was talking about, and it's like, she's talking to the entire bus, whoever cares to listen, I guess. And she was saying, oh yeah, like, you know, it's too bad that I like transportation. Like, I could have been a doctor or something. I'm sure my mom would have preferred that I liked being a doctor or something like that, something she could be proud of, but I like bus driving, you know? And it's like, okay. Some guy gave her like a McDonald's breakfast that he had. The guy seemed very drunk. It was really weird because I don't think I've ever seen someone enjoying their job that much. And that includes people who have jobs that look a lot more fun. I mean, driving a bus doesn't seem super fun. You know what I mean? But she fucking loved it. And it was just her. But, you know, she also had this personality that just made it seem like if her job was like repairing change machines at laundromats, she'd be like whistle while you work type of person. I don't know. It was weird. But she was great. It was just funny too to hear. I mean, I guess like if I had a kid and they were a bus driver, but they were like that, I'd be like, yeah, she seems pretty happy. I guess that's fine, you know? And also I'd be like, yeah, she seems like she got into it young. I bet they have a pretty good pension and stuff like that. So go get them. Go get them, Tiger. We went to a lit crawl. So we were going to go to the Portland Book Festival or something. They used to have this event called Wordstock, which was like a bunch of small, not all small, but a lot of like local authors. And then they'd have a few big names came and did talks or did like mini workshops and stuff like that. This is when I first met Tom Spanbauer in person. It was at one of these. I peed next to him because it was really awkward because I was going into the class he was about to do. And then I went to the bathroom first, and then he came walking in, and he's like at the urinal next to me, I think, and I was just like, oh, this is unfortunate, because I didn't want to meet him at the urinal. So it used to be called Wordstock, and then they changed it to like Portland Book Festival or something like that, which I was like, the Wordstock is such a better name. Must have been taken by something else, or I was like, maybe they're trying to make it more sincere or something, but I hate it. I hate it like poison. But anyway, Boonmaster Flex and I went a few years ago because Tom was doing a thing, and so we went for that mostly. And like, we went and we waited to see John Krakauer. He was kind of the keynote big guy. And so we're waiting out in the rain in this line that goes around a building, right? Like, we go to get into the thing. And then it was almost comical because we go to the front door and the line is out the door. So then we're following the line and then it goes around the corner. And then you get around the corner and you're like, oh my God, it goes around the next corner. And we go around the next corner. And like, it was such a long walk that it was almost like we were closer to being in line when we were at the front door than when we started walking towards what we thought was the back of the line. Like, we should have gone the other way around the building. But so then we waited, and it's a pretty big-ass building. But so we're waiting outside for probably, like, 45 minutes before someone comes in and is like, okay, the venue's full, so no one else can get in. Which I was like, motherfuckers. You couldn't have had someone come out and be like, okay, heads up. This venue holds 150 people, and you are currently 275 in line. So there's a very low chance you're going to get in. Because if we would have known that, I would have been like, all right, we could go do something else. Then we waited in line for something else that we ended up not going to because the line was like real claustrophobic and like surrounded by people inside. And it was like they had a panel, and then we wanted to see the person who was going up after that panel. So we're waiting, but you have to wait for the panel to end. And then some of the people leave who are at the previous, but a lot of them didn't. So there's still not chair. It was not like real well run in terms of like crowd control and like knowing where things were when and so on. So anyway, I was a little turned off of the whole thing, but we were maybe going to go. And instead, we went to this lit crawl thing on the Friday night, which was basically like the thing. We went to like literary bingo, and we go in there and it's like you can't even get into the place where the thing was. Like we couldn't even get into the bar. So then we decided to just wait until this third thing, which happened at this space where the workshop was. And Lydia was there, and a bunch of other people were reading. And it was like, oh my God. Was it ever, it's exactly what you would expect a super literary thing to be, which is like, it was a bunch of middle-aged white ladies and one super obnoxious guy. There were poets there, and he was like snapping his fingers like crazy, you know? And I was like, what do you think this is? You think this is like some Jack Kerouac? Who's that guy? Who am I thinking of? Coney Island of the Mind guy or whatever that was called. Fuck. It's got that long name. It's like Fonzarelli, but it's not. All right, let's see. Island of the Mind. Ferlinghetti. I swear to you, I thought of it before I actually got the Google. It's like a Lawrence Ferlinghetti thing, you know, from the late 50s or something. What does this guy think he's doing? Let's do another take. Where does this guy think he is in 1958 in San Francisco listening to Lawrence Ferlinghetti? Huh? And then, like, you know, there was different people had different skills and whatever. But then Lydia went up last. And all she did was she said this thing that I guess, you know, Christine Blasey Ford said about, you know, my hippocampus or whatever. Let's see if I can find the quote. I think that's what it was. Indelible on the hippocampus. Indelible in the hippocampus. So it was something like that, you know, because she said indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter. And so Lydia started this chant of something about the words were written in my hippocampus or something, and then repeated it and had everyone repeat it in the audience. And they did that like 10 times. And that was her entire thing. It was almost like a little performance art thing, which I did not enjoy. I guess I felt a little tricked because it's like we kind of went there and I was like, well, I don't really know these other folks, but, you know, I'm excited to hear her read something. Like, I like her writing and whatever. And she basically did the bare minimum. And also, it was like, I just felt like I was being tricked into seeing these other authors that I didn't really care about. And I was like, I'm fine with that. Like, okay, you put your Lydia Yuknovich up there with other folks who no one's heard of. So that way, or, you know, I shouldn't say no one's heard of. They're less famous. But you do that to bring people in, and I'm like, yeah, I get that. But then, like, then it's like you get the rug pulled out under you because she didn't really do anything. And it was a letdown. It just reminded me of, like, poetry things that I've seen before where you go to them. And then it was like what I imagine most people imagine a poetry reading is like, which is like a bunch of people – sitting around and seemingly pretending to understand this super figurative language and stuff that didn't really make sense. And they're like, yes, you're speaking the truth. And I was like, sure, sure, why not? While we're on the topics of books and whatnot, so I was a long list finalist for a book prize, which I didn't win. So just in case you wanted an update on that, I'm still not famous. You're still listening to an unknown podcaster / writer / Spider-Man non-authority. So there you go. But I did see today, there's a thing, you know, Jonathan Franzen yesterday was on a Twitter trending topic. And so, of course, I clicked on that because I was like, well, this ain't going to be good. You know, because whenever Franzen is in, you know, the popular eye, it's not a good thing. It's always bad. It's kind of like there have been two times in my life, one being last night when I ate a pickled egg. And it's never a good thing when I'm eating a pickled egg because it means I'm very drunk. To even consider that, and then to have my inhibitions lowered enough that I can be peer pressured into it. I mean, I guess the good news is my friends, when I've been drinking, just try to peer pressure me into eating a pickled egg, which they also ate, I mean, and enjoyed. I thought I was going to vomit. For sure. And I was like, I'm already kind of sloshed, but I think this egg, if I do throw up, I'm going to blame this egg for sure. And everyone else would be like, maybe it was like the 9 drinks you had in the night preceding that egg. And I'll be like, no, it was that fucking egg. So anyway, whenever Franzen's in the news, it's not a good thing. It's not usually because it's like, he's announced a new book. Everyone's like, oh, clap, clap, clap. It's like, I don't know. He said something that people got mad about. I kind of think, though, that Franzen is just like, he's like the enemy that we want to have. Like, we want him to be this villain. And I think he's not really a villain. I think it's fine to not like him. But the way he's sort of, like, scrutinized and vilified by... It grosses me out because he's very vilified by, like, the writing community. I think he just is, like, the poster boy for a certain type of, like, literary fiction. And but basically he takes all the shit for that entire group of people instead of his due amount. So he put up this thing, and it was, like, his 10 rules for novelists, right? And so everyone was flipping out and being like, he's such a fucking asshole and what a loser and blah, blah, blah. So I decided to look at him, though, because I was like, well, I don't know. Let's be serious. If there's a thing that Jonathan Franzen is qualified to give advice on, it's writing novels. He's written many successful novels, and his novels continue to be successful despite his personality. He's like the most hated yet most popular author of that kind of novel, right? So I was like, well, all right. If it was Jonathan Franzen's, well, if he had like 10 pieces of advice for bird watching, apparently he's also into that, so I'd be like, okay. But, you know, if it was Jonathan Franzen's 10 advice for buying jeans, I'd be like, why would I care about that? Or if it was like Jonathan Franzen's 10 pieces of advice for using Twitter, I'd be like, no. But, all right, let's just do it. So number one, the reader is a friend, not an adversary, not a spectator. Which is kind of generic, right? But harmless. And I do think that there's something in here that I think if you can expand on it, which is like I think that when I was younger, I was part of this. So I'm going to say it's a younger writer thing or like new to writing, where you want things to be mysterious. And so you leave things more mysterious than you should, or you kind of put like little twists into things because you just think that a story needs that. And usually it doesn't. Usually the clarity is more important than the, like, there's this idea that a reader is going to pick up your stuff and be intrigued by the mystery of it. Like, be intrigued because they're like, I don't know what's going on right now, and continue reading it. And I think that's total bullshit. So I think that's kind of, that's my interpretation. So number one, I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty down with it. Two, fiction that isn't an author's personal adventure into the frightening or the unknown isn't worth writing for anything but money. Yeah, I mean, I guess I think that's true as well. I mean, you know, Tom would always talk about writing from the sore place, the place of hurt and that kind of thing. So this is a very similar thing. Three, never use the word then as a conjunction. We have and for this purpose. Substituting then is the lazy or tone-deaf writer's non-solution to the problem of too many ands on the page. Very specific. But you know what? Again, I like if there's going to be 10 rules. I do like when there's specific stuff. You know, Elmore Leonard is famous because he's got, I think, 10 rules or something. And one of them is like, don't use any words except for said or asked, maybe, is the other one he allows. But he's like, just use said. Don't say that they exclaimed or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I'm down with that. I don't think I use then as a conjunction very often. Like, what would that be? An if-then statement or something? Four, write in third person unless a really distinctive first-person voice offers itself irresistibly. This is a weird question about first and third person. And I feel like a lot of writers ask that question about, like, they're working on a story and they're like, I don't know if this should be in first or third person or what. And I've never had that problem. I mean, I very rarely write in third person, but like, it just doesn't, it seems like the story and or character dictate that, and it's not even really a choice. So I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily, but hey, whatever. Five, when information becomes free and universally accessible, voluminous research for a novel is devalued along with it. I totally agree with that. I mean, I think you have to be careful because, like, he's being very short. Like, each one of these is a short sentence. And so he's, I think, using his words carefully, and he's saying the voluminous research isn't worthless, but devalued. And I think that's true. When I was in the workshop with Chuck, he talked a lot about head authority, which is like you establish your authority so people listen to you by, you know, one of the ways to do that is to bring up this sort of body of knowledge, especially if it's like knowledge that most people wouldn't have. But he was saying, you know, like now that you can just get online and learn a lot of this stuff, it's really not as valuable to people, and it doesn't mean the same thing because anyone is kind of like, well, I could get online and learn that. You know what I mean? So I do agree with that, I guess. It's like, and I think that what he's saying too is it seems like he's not saying that this is a good or bad thing, just a thing. Let's see. Six, the most purely autobiographical fiction requires pure invention. Nobody ever wrote a more autobiographical story than The Metamorphosis. I mean, maybe. I don't know if I agree with that one. But, like, again, lots of people were getting real pissed off about this, and I'm just like, this seems very inoffensive to me. I mean, this is kind of, I guess, a challenge to the write what you know sort of thing. Or, you know, again, like Tom said this thing a lot, fiction is the lie that tells the truth truer. So you tell it something in a fictional way because that's the better way to say what you want to say, you know, about what really happened and how you felt. And I don't know. Yeah, I'm into it. Seven, you see more sitting still than chasing after. That just sounds like chicken soup for the soul, but okay, whatever. This is the one that really pissed people off, it seemed like. 8. It's doubtful that anyone with an internet connection at his workplace is writing good fiction. And people seemed really incensed about that. Although, here was the irony of it is, okay, whenever I have a Twitter account that I use for library stuff, right? And whenever some article comes out, like there was the one a little while ago about some guy wrote for an article for like Forbes that was like, just have Amazon take over the libraries. And, you know, then he gets like a shitstorm of librarians tweeting at him and blah, blah, blah. But part of me is like, guys, shouldn't we be busy working right now if what we're doing is so important? Like, I think it is, but I think you're kind of proving his point because you're like, we have so much time to do these long Twitter rants, and it's like, it's 1 o'clock on a Tuesday. Like, don't you have better things to do? And also, don't you have better things to do than, like, angrily tweet about an article that's obviously stupid? I mean, come on, man. You're killing me. You're killing me. Because I'm just like, yeah, there's always some crackpot who writes that libraries should be privatized or done in the schools or whatever article. Like, every 6 months, one of these hits big and then everyone's talking about it in the library world and whatever. And I'm like, yeah, there's always some crackpot. I mean, this is like, how many articles or how many things are you going to read about like 9/11 was an inside job? Or do you just read that and you're just like, this is probably a crackpot and doesn't really warrant a deep dive and a response? It doesn't really warrant a thoughtful response when the initial idea is without merit entirely. So anyway, it was kind of like that with this because, you know, people were really shitting on this whole thing. But I was like, well, he's right in as much as anyone who's responding to this right now on Twitter is not writing good fiction at the same time. I can tell you that right now. And it's probably just a distraction and probably a waste of your time. I mean, there you go. So, I think he's being controversial. Like, I think he knows that what he's doing when he says that. But I think he's saying something that's smart, which is like, hey, why not try writing with your internet not working? You know, he was kind of famous a while ago for, he had some, like a laptop he used for writing, and he had disabled the Wi-Fi on it. You know, he'd like crammed something into the port or something. Maybe it wasn't Wi-Fi, maybe it was the cable internet at the time or whatever. And so he crammed something into that Cat 5 cable port into his computer and broke it off so that like you couldn't connect. It was impossible to connect this computer to the internet. And I think people were like, oh God, have some self-control or something. But I was like, I don't know, man. This is kind of what I think about Franzen. I think we hate Franzen because we see ourselves in Franzen. And like he's willing to expose the fact that he has weak self-control in using the internet. And then it's like, this is the other thing about Franzen is it's like, we shit on Franzen for having bad internet self-control. Who has good internet self-control, though? Like, does anybody? Is there anyone in the world who's, like, using the internet an appropriate amount only for the things they really need it for and not bullshit? Or, like, only things that entertain and that they enjoy, not just, like, nonsense? I don't think the internet helps you write good fiction. Let me just put it that way. 9. Interesting verbs are seldom very interesting. I wholly agree with that. I mean, I don't know. I'm from a plain language school of thought. Like, you don't have to use fancy words. You can, but be careful. And yeah, like, the perfect verb is usually not the perfect verb, if that makes sense. I don't know. I'm from the school of like, hey, the story should be told like you would tell it, you know, 2 drinks in and you're just telling it to your friend. that's how a story should be told. And so that doesn't really allow for super technical language most of the time. 10, you have to love before you can be relentless. I don't actually know what that one means. That was probably my least favorite one because I was like, I don't know what that means. You have to love before you can be relentless. I don't know. You have to love before you can give enough of a shit about anything to be unstoppable. I mean, that's a hard one to take apart and really understand like what he's talking about. Also, it's like the least writing related one, right? It's like, what? Wait, what? Come on. As they say on the Flophouse. Wait, what? Come on. So there you go. Those are his 10 things. And like, to be honest, I think like 8 of them are sound advice. And the other 2 are not necessarily bad advice, but just advice I don't agree with. But I think what's so crazy about all this stuff is like, I don't know. I mean, writers give advice all the time, and I've seen much worse advice than this. There's nothing in here that I think if you followed these pieces of advice to a T, I don't think it would be bad. There's nothing in here that I'm like, oh my God, well, that'll ruin everything. I don't know. I think the other thing is, when you look at writing advice like this, or if you're going to try something like, I think it's great to do, to create under some kind of restriction, right? And so like, if your restriction is that you're like, I'm not going to use these interesting verbs, I'm going to use plain language. And then it's like, then you break the rules sometimes, but like learning under different restrictions teaches you different things. And you're never going to learn anything if you don't, I don't know. And I just fucking, like, I don't understand. I genuinely don't understand why it is so aggravating to people that, like, this is on the internet. These 10 pieces of advice. Because I'm just like, this is pretty tame stuff. And, like, nothing, there's nothing earth-shattering happening here. I just don't know who has the energy to be, like, angry about this. It's not like he's advising, I don't know. He's like, oh, you know what you should do is go around in blackface for several months in order to write a black character, you know? And it's like, I don't know if that's a good idea, Franzen. I don't know if I can get behind that one. Or like, when I was writing about an abusive relationship, I abused my spouse for a while. And you're like, I don't know. And it's not even advice that I think turns you into a Franzen-esque writer. I mean, most of it's very general. So I guess I've become disappointed in the various circles in which I run. You know, I get disappointed by librarians when they're freaking out on the let Amazon do the libraries person, because I'm just like, chill out, guys. Like, we're fine. We're doing fine. No one thinks this guy is correct. Why don't we all just go into work today? And like, if something like that makes us mad that they say about libraries, let's prove him wrong by doing a really good job today. Whatever thing you were going to do today, give it another 5% effort or something. Rather than doing that, you know, rather than tweeting at the library guy and being all mad about it, why don't you tweet about something that's going on at your library? I mean, no one will care, but whatever. You're adding something to the world. And like, same thing with this guy. It's just like, I don't know, if his advice is not to your liking or whatever, that's fine. I mean, it's such a subjective thing. I think maybe that's it. It's like, I don't understand how someone can raise so much anger over such a subjective thing as writing advice. You know, it's like painting advice. I mean, you take classes, they teach you how to paint, and not everything they say is going to work for everybody. And like, who cares? Why? Since when? Since why should everything work for everybody anyway? Like, if everything worked for everybody, I'd be like, well, that's probably terrible advice. if it works for everyone. Anyway, that's my soapbox for today. That's probably about it, huh? That's probably all we have time for. I'm like looking at the time. I'm like, my gosh, where has the time gone, huh? Thanks to everyone for listening. If you won a Potoween prize, which you should know who you are, you should expect to see that coming in the mail shortly. I've received them and am reshipping them. I should have just shipped them straight to you, but I'm dumb. So I didn't do that. But they're on their way. So I hope you enjoy those. You know, post pictures with some hashtag. I don't care what hashtag. Hippocampus hashtag. All right, we'll see you next time.